We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Let me officially say, welcome to the Science of Reading Week. For those of you who may not know us, Lexia is a Cambium brand, and we offer a comprehensive suite of science of reading-based literacy solutions, as well as evidence-based assessment and intervention solutions from Voyager Sopris Learning. I am your host, Cassandra Wheeler, Director of Letters State Success with Lexia. I'll be here every day as we kick off our star-studded group of presenters for our Science of Reading Week. And so it's wonderful to meet all of you. Hello, wherever you are. And thank you so much for being here. Again, I am so thrilled that so many of you are joining us for our second annual educational event that's devoted to the science of reading. And we're going to be learning from some of the most respected minds in the national literacy community and celebrating the brilliant, dedicated work of educators like you who are implementing structured literacy in classrooms all across the country. And of course, we'd also like to thank our partners at EdWeb and our brilliant presenters. Speaking of brilliant presenters, let's not waste another moment. Let me introduce to you this wonderful panel today. First, I'd like for you to meet Paula White. Paula has taught elementary grades, founded and led a public charter school, and served as the New Jersey Department of Education's Chief Turnaround Officer in charge of public school improvement statewide. Her work has resulted in broad policy changes, including universal dyslexia screening for students in grades K through 2, and the expansion of restorative justice programs in public schools. She is recently named to Politics New York's Education Power List and recognized by City and State New York as part of the 2021 Education Power 100. Paula loves being with her family, reconnecting with students she's taught over the years, and also walking solo while listening to podcasts. Welcome, Paula, and thank you so much for joining us. Next, we have Rich Zigarovich, who is the principal at Lordstown and has been there. This is a K-6 school. He has been there in Warren, Ohio since 2017. He is deeply passionate about seeing the students and staff he serves grow as learners and people. After almost 29 years in education, he is glad to report that every year gets better and better. And we love hearing that. Thank you, Rich. And we're so excited to have you join us today. Also with Paul and Rich, Lexia's own Dr. Erin Hamilton, whose career journey began as a literacy consultant in Pennsylvania. She earned her doctorate in educational leadership from Immaculata University with her dissertation centered on the self-efficacy of elementary principals in foundational literacy leadership. Over the past 2 years, Dr. Hamilton has played a pivotal role on Lexia's national strategy team, extending her influence across the United States, supporting the legislative literacy movement. She resides in St. Augustine, Florida, with her beloved family. Welcome, Erin, and thank you so much for joining us. All right, without further ado, let's just get started. So we have our school leaders and our teachers and others that are here in our audience today. And so we know that school leaders understand that the science of reading provides proven, evidence-based practices about how best to teach students, regardless of their abilities. And we're providing instruction for them on these evidence-based practices and how best to teach them from all different backgrounds how to read. But the transition to instruction in grounded in the science of reading can sometimes be very daunting. So I'd love to hear from each of you from your personal experiences. Why do you think that's the case? And Erin, maybe we can start with you to kick us off, and then we'll proceed to Paula and then Rich.
Sure. Thank you, Cass. Hello, everyone. I have seen across the country this amazing shift in structured literacy practices in our education classrooms and also in this literacy space, this leadership space. And where my conversation ultimately goes is how do we really move from surviving this change to growing through this change? And I'm really excited to join Paula and Rich in this conversation today to think through how do we make sure that our mindset is in the right place? And how do we make sure that we're growing a culture of example with these literacy leaders across the country? Because as we know, student success is really the biggest motivator for both educators and leaders. So how do we take this knowledge that we're hoping to gain in this research and really change our instruction based on what we know? When we know better, we do better, right? And I think our country right now is seeing such a great space of knowing better, knowing how to meet students where they are and how to teach them in effective ways that are really going to change our student outcomes across the country. So my biggest suggestion here is really to think through how we as leaders are building this culture and building this climate of leading by example. I can pass it over to Paula next.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you,
Erin.
Thank you. And hello to everyone. I'm so glad that you could join us. I know what you do, whether you're a teacher, administrator, and there are lots of demands on your time. So grateful that you're here. You know, when I hear this question, I think about it in a matrix, sort of a skill, will, hill matrix. A lot of times we talk about the skill and the will. I'm going to add another, which we don't often talk about, and that's the hill. So I was just visiting a family in Jamaica, and I was driving, okay, driving on the left-hand side of the road. And so thinking about all of the brain pathways, it really underscores the idea that it is very difficult to unlearn things. And I think a big part of that is really what I think about when I say the hill, right? So administrators, they want what's best for their students. There's no question about that. I haven't met administrators that don't want to really have as many students learn as possible. And of course, and the best of us always want to support teachers in doing that. But there are so many things to unlearn if you have been doing something differently. So, you know, if I go back to my analogy of driving in Jamaica, if you're driving on the left-hand side, that means that the driver's side is actually on the right-hand side. So every time I was going back in the car, I was going on the wrong side, right? It means that when I'm making a turn, I have to look in the different direction for the oncoming traffic. So there are all of these things that I'm managing simultaneously. And that is what I think we have to really appreciate when we think about our administrators. So then let's go. So that's the hill. Let's think about the skill. Right. And often when we talk about this, we put this all in teachers' laps. And, you know, can I get a witness? Right. If you're in the classroom, think you've been there.
Absolutely.
Right. And yes, teachers Absolutely. Are important. But the reality of the situation is that we need to have administrators to have the skill to be able to support teachers. We're not talking about gotchas here. We're talking about supporting, knowing what to look for in the classroom, knowing how to give feedback that is, effective. So making sure that when we're thinking about training, we're not leaving our administrators behind. So that would, I think, be the skill, and I talked about the will, the hill, and then also just that will, making sure that administrators have enough off of their plate that they can really be instructional leaders, I think is super important, so that, obviously there's, administrators administrate. There's lots of paperwork, and we do appreciate that. We know that that's important. But if they're going to be instructional leaders, we have to make sure that the infrastructure in the school is such that it will facilitate that for our instructional leaders.
I love that. Hill, skill, and will. Thank you so much for that. That's wonderful. Rich, we'll toss to you.
Okay, Cassandra, thank you so much. It's great being here with everybody today. And the timing is perfect. Typically this time of the day, my secretary takes her lunch and I have to cover her desk for her. Her job is very difficult, I can tell you. So this is actually a break for me. So I don't have to answer the phone and the door and everything else at that point. So it's great to be here. And I want to start by saying, Erin said something that really is something that I preach here at Lordstown, is the culture. Building that culture is so important and so critical, I think, to success. And it's not just about the culture around literacy, but it's also a building culture about, you know, I want my people to enjoy coming to work here every day. I want them to take pride in the school that they work in and the wonderful student population we have here. So I think it all starts there. But, you know, it really, really can be, you know, a daunting task for sure. And I'm thankful that I have a staff that's willing. And I'm one of those ones that, like, okay, I've been here 7 years and I feel like, you know, I've got teachers that have been teaching reading longer than I've, you know, been here, and I'm learning along with them. So it is difficult, but teachers need to be receptive to change. And we throw a lot at them. Their plates are definitely full. And, you know, I feel like here the last couple of years, it's been one thing after another, but I also do believe in what we are doing and how we are teaching children. And I think that's why you said earlier about my biography, you know, it gets better every year, and it does. And I love what we're doing, and I love how we're changing, and I love how we're evolving, but I also love seeing how we're growing. And I love hearing students talking about it. I was just in the classroom this morning doing observations, and they were like, first graders talking about digraphs. So those are things that I like. But it's also important that when we have this change, it's not about just one or two. If we get one or two of our staff members to change, we're in great shape. It's got to be everybody. We all have to have our arrows pointing in the same direction to have building wide change for success. So I think that is important. And the one thing, you know, with that is leadership. It's, you know, there's a lot of, you know, we have a lot of principles in this session. And it is, leadership is critical. You know, I spend a lot of time processing the research so I can share it and have collaborative discussions with my staff and also being able to rely on and find resources as necessary. So, you know, we are the point person for sure. But I also, again, I'm going to come back to, I think it's so important that people understand and our staff understands that, I make mistakes too, and I'm learning this process as well. So it's a big change for me as a principal, which I absolutely love. And then finally, I would just say with our families as well, you know, we've had to do a lot more communication, and I'm in the state of Ohio, so we've had to change a lot of things in our K-3 with students, and you know, dyslexia screening and so forth. So you know, when we're making all these changes, these new laws and practices, I think it's important that we're able to communicate this message to our parents in parent-friendly terms as well. And I don't necessarily like putting that all on my staff. I think it's important that it comes from me first. But again, it's another level, another layer for teachers. And like I said, we want to make sure that they're fully supported. So it definitely is a daunting task. But if you build that culture, people will join in and people go to bat with for you. So thank you.
Thank you. And I know the audience, that chat is just growing, and I know they are taking copious notes. Because again, as I said at the beginning, you know, we have to think about your role in administration as the lead teacher in the building. And all the things that you all just said really do support that. So some people may have missed the poll. We've got over 1,000 people now, like 1.3. So I want to address this way before I go into this next question. So if you are here now, and you're in the role of an administrator, and yes, if you did go through your science of reading as a teacher, let's do a thumbs up. Give us a thumbs up emoji. If you are now an administrator, but you had the opportunity to experience science of reading while you were still in the classroom as a teacher. Okay, wonderful. We're kind of taking that in. Now, let's talk about professional development. So from our panelists here, in your view, do you think principals can be trained to be science of reading advocates, right? We want them to think about being advocates for the science of reading and therefore capable of accelerating literacy. So do principals and other school leaders require more specific kinds of literacy professional development? And then if so, what are those examples? And could you give some examples for our school leaders who are looking to address reading achievement in their schools? Maybe they haven't been the experienced teacher that went through science of reading content, and they want to start with themselves being mindful of this movement towards science of reading. So Rich, this time we're going to start with you, and then we'll follow with Aaron and Paula. Okay, thank you.
Well, as I just got done saying, I think it's important as a principal to be that advocate and to be out in front of the message. And how I convey it. And it's important too that, like, my superintendent's wonderful. He gives me, you know, a lot of freedom and trusts what I do. And that's what you want. You want someone to trust what you're doing. So, you know, I advocate through a lot of channels. I have newsletters. I have a social media page. My PTO is so vital. And I always tell them beginning of the year, I don't want it to be like a meet and greet type meeting, but I want it to be informational. I want them to know, hey, this is what we're doing this year as a school. And I think it's so vital. But I also think too, another critical piece is don't be afraid to share that leadership. We have over the last few years done some training in science of reading, and I've had some teachers here quite a few years back that got the letters training. So, you know, I lean on them as well. And I say, would you mind speaking to this at the PTO meeting? And they really embrace that. So sharing that leadership is so important. I can also tell you that I got a lot of support from our County Educational Service Center, and our literacy experts there are wonderful. And they have provided me with so much help and support in knowing what to do and knowing what to say and how to address things. And that really makes a huge difference. They've also got to set up in the AIM Institute, which I know is out of Eastern Pennsylvania. We have been working with some experts there in a literacy leadership group. So some principals from this area, we meet once a month, whether it's in person or via Zoom, and that we get help and support as principals, because we're not experts. I don't pretend like I know everything, and I'm learning along with my staff. So I think being that advocate for why it's important and having those conversations is so critical.
So Rich, while you're still there, there's a question about how large the school is that you support. Could you just speak to that really quickly? And what type of environment is it? Is it a rural setting? Is it an urban setting? Can you speak to that really quickly?
I am in a rural setting, Lordstown, Ohio. You may have heard the story a few years back. We lost our Chevy plant, which hit this community pretty hard. But we're starting to, you know, we're building back and we're doing better. But my school is K-6, and we have about 230 kids in my building.
Very good. Thank you so much for answering that. Mm-hmm. All right, we go back to our panel.
Sure. There were several things that Rich said that resonated with me that I had on my list to respond to as well. So I love that we're coming from the same mindset here, because I do think our leaders in the building really need to be literacy leaders. And I like how you use the word advocate, Cass, because the knowledge, the depth of knowledge that our teachers will require to move student outcomes is significantly different than the depth of knowledge that our literacy leaders in the building as a principal or assistant principal require. Because I think although the science of reading, the research that Rich talked about immersing himself in and getting familiar with is very important, I also think the implementation science is the piece that changes what our teachers are doing. And so when you're going in to have the walkthroughs that he mentioned, and you have specific look fors that your teachers are aware of, they're not that, you're not there to do a gotcha, like Paula mentioned earlier. It's really a collaborative effort of, these are what we're looking at as a literacy team. We're going to come in and look for this in your instruction. This is the piece of your literacy block that we want to focus in on professional development. As a leader, I'm going to encourage myself to grow in that space as well. So where can I look to gain more knowledge in that specific area? I know our letters suite contains the letters for administrators, which I see popping up in the chat, that other people that are here are being a part of those new cohorts going on across the country. And the one part that I see happening the most in those cohorts that I'm able to join is really taking it from the why to the how. So we can read the research as leaders. We can immerse ourselves in this new knowledge that we're building our background in. And even if we were educators prior to going into a leadership space, a lot of us didn't have the science of reading training that our educators are now learning. I'll speak for myself as one of those. Being, a K-5 educator first before moving into administration, I did not have the knowledge of the science of reading when I was in the classroom teaching. And we know that our National Center for Teaching Quality is sharing those results with us across the country right now, that our educators that are coming in really need that support and that knowledge to be effective in their classrooms. So being able to be a leader where we can suggest tools that teachers are pulling from their toolbox to help their students is crucial to the process. And so we need to be familiar enough to be an advocate, as Cass mentioned, but the depth of knowledge just needs to be slightly different, in my opinion, for those leaders. The knowledge is not enough. We really need to know how to do that implementation science piece as well. Talking about family and community engagement, so important to that piece. talking about data-driven discussions, all of that plays a part in being that literacy leader.
Yeah. So, you know, I want to start by saying that I think building community is so important. I kind of want to double tap on something that Rich mentioned a moment ago about, you know, being, you know, having principals meeting once a month and so on. You know, I know when I was a teacher, there were so many teachers that were better than me in, you know, in many of the different things that we had to do. And so being able to lean on my colleagues in places where I wasn't as strong, asking questions, feeling vulnerable, that was really important for me in order to become the best educator. And you know, when I left the classroom, I was kicking butt, y'all. But like, let me just tell you, before that, it was hard. And that's when I really could learn and grow from my colleagues. But a principal is typically the only principal in the building, right? And so if there is not an intent around building community with principals, then what we will find is that a lot of times those administrators feel the need to, you know, show that, you know, well, I'm the leader in this building. I can't be vulnerable. I have to show that I kind of know what I'm doing, even if I'm not quite sure. But without that community with other folks who are in that same role in other buildings in your town, in your district, or even elsewhere, then I do think that there, you know, that there will be a deficit there. So let's start with building community among our administrators. And then I would, you know, really just sort of reiterate what was stated before around leading, but also with regard to culture, being in a learning mode as well. So I think with leading, principals have opportunities, administrators have opportunities that other people don't have. So you can, let's say at the building level, you may be making decisions that teachers don't always get to make. You know, you've got some extra money at the end of the year. You've got some Title I dollars. Okay, we want to build vocabulary. So yes, we, you know, can build science content vocabulary, for example, but if you really understand the science of reading, then you know that morphology is huge, and you know that maybe we can, you know, purchase books that really get at, the units of meaning within a word so that students can grow by understanding, you know, the root of words and prefixes and suffixes, and that way they can build their vocabulary exponentially in a shorter period of time. If you don't understand about the science of reading, then you might make a different decision at the building level. And then, of course, at the classroom level, as you mentioned, with those look fors, if a student is struggling and they're, you know, looking for a picture to kind of, you know, as a life raft, and, you know, being able to know that, you know, you might be able to give feedback and watch to see if a teacher is giving, you know, the feedback that would be most helpful for that student. Because if the administrators are not versed enough in actually the nuts and bolts of the science of reading, then we, and I say we because I was an administrator at one point, we will fall back to what we know. So now we will focus just on classroom management. Don't get me wrong, classroom management, super important, but I'm talking about the pedagogy and understanding the quality of instruction that needs to exist. So we have to make sure that administrators are, you know, legit in the classroom. They know what they're doing. So that way they don't just have to, you know, focus on other things that may be on the periphery, albeit quite important. So again, building community, leading and being able to use that leadership lens to make macro decisions at the building level, but also being in a learning mode and recognizing, you know, LeBron's coaches can't play as well as LeBron can, but they know what to tell LeBron to do in order to play well.
Yes, that's exactly what I just said. And I love it. That was much better said than I said. I love it. Thank you, Paula.
And this audience is fully invested and engaged in everything that you're saying. There's one question that I want to throw out to you guys, because it's a great segue from what we're talking about at this very moment. And let's speak to our audience members that have administrators, where the administrator sees themselves as the logistical leader and not so much as the instructional leader. And while they need both, it is important that they can advocate and support the instruction that's happening in their building. So for any of you, how do we help with that shift from being just logistical to also recognizing that It's the principal. You are the lead teacher in the building. You are the instructional leader of the other teachers in that building. How do we communicate that?
I think it's important. When I sit down with with my teachers, we have our TBT meetings. And one of the things we talk about since our training is that I always like to ask, are there things that you're struggling with in implementation? Because I think implementation is a critical component, and we need to make sure we need to give time for that, because we don't expect perfection on the first day, but we also make sure we provide support. And I remember, and one of the audience members I wrote this down because they'd said about, I wish an administrator could borrow a classroom to try some of these strategies. And I love that so much. And I actually was helping a teacher with a phoning segmentation lesson, and breaking it down into a graphic organizer. And she was like, well, why don't you come in and show me? So it's one of those things where it's like, okay, being in a small school, you get to know the kids pretty well. So that's not the issue, but you want to make sure you don't screw up in front of those kids. So I made sure that I got a little support from our County Educational Service Center in implementation. But I also think it's important that, like, I did that and then sat down with them, and we kind of talked about how I did it, how they did it. It's important, I think, too, for teachers to see somebody else do it. And I think that's one thing that I've been really happy with my staff, is stepping out of that bubble of, like, I'm not going to go look in somebody else's room. I don't feel comfortable doing that. I'm starting to see more of that now, and it makes me feel good as an administrator.
Rich, you are such an exemplary leader. You model what you preach. You sit in for the secretary so she can have a proper break. You teach and instruct your teachers so that you can support what they're doing. I guarantee you there are administrators in this webcast with us right now that you've planted a seed in their minds of what they're going to go back into their buildings and do. And I see some hearts and love for you. And I just appreciate you so much for your contributions to what you're doing there in Ohio. But I want to shift the conversation just a wee bit to focusing a little bit more directly on supporting and empowering the teachers to secure their partnership in incorporating the science of reading. So, you know, we know that school leaders are going to be setting policy that's aimed at accelerating literacy, and that impact on the classroom instruction will vary greatly depending on the individual teacher. So you're talking about the difference between a LeBron in the classroom versus me, right? Okay, so how do we help those administrators support those teachers in interpreting those requirements so that they can agree to them and then have the ability to implement them and so on back in the classroom? So could you each discuss some specific ways in which principals, as well as school leadership in general, can address this for teachers to make sure they are fully invested in providing what's necessary for their students with regard to their understanding of the science of reading? So we talked about the leadership support, but then let's focus specifically on how we're supporting and pushing that and making it relevant and palatable for our actual classroom educators. So Paula, can we start with you, and then we'll follow with Aaron and wrap up with that with Rich?
Yeah, I'm happy to start. So, you know, the question you said sort of to secure partnership, right? And so when you say, you know, how can you secure the partnership of a teacher? What I hear is, you know, that old school word of buy-in. You know, how do you get buy-in? And for me, I think that it starts with tapping into the funds of knowledge that teachers already have. So I taught elementary school when I used to teach third grade, and we would have, you know, a new unit in social studies, for example. We would do that old school KWL chart. The K is what you know, the W is what you want to know, and the L is what you learned. And it was really, students really responded to that because you started with what they know. We're starting a new unit, but guess what? You already know things about this topic. You already have experience. You already learned things in second grade. Your mom, your dad, your uncle already told you things about being in the war. You know things already about this thing, right? And so I think that starting with acknowledging and tapping into what teachers already know about the science of reading as you're making that shift, I think is really important. And that, quite frankly, is going to be contingent upon administrators knowing their teachers, right? If you don't know your teachers well, if you're not taking the time to talk to them, you know, to give them feedback in the classroom, to look at their lesson plans, you don't know them. So this is important. So start with what they know and acknowledge that. I also think it's important to establish the why. My undergraduate degree is child development from Spelman College. Shout out to HBCUs. And, you know, one of the things that we talk about and we know is very, very fundamental to children is that why. And if you've ever been around a kid, you know that, right? And so that carries on into adulthood. We don't like to be told that this is what we're doing and nobody tells us why. Give me some data. Let me meet a teacher. Do something that lets me know why we are doing this. Is it just because it's a shiny new penny? Because that's not good enough for me. Tell me why and give me the facts, okay? And then I think also creating peer leadership and support, because I guarantee you, I don't care if you've been a science of reading building or not, you have teachers in that building that have been doing that science of reading and they know what they are doing. So as soon as you get started on this work, find those peer leaders that can then work and, you know, just informally talk to other teachers, maybe even pair them at, you know, the same table when you're having staff meeting or whatever the heck. And so that way that peer leadership can rise to the top, because that is really, I think, empowering for building, you know, empowering teachers by seeing that there are teachers that are already empowered. And finally, I would say really recognizing small wins. When we are making shifts are hard. We already talked about that. So when folks are doing that work to make that happen, let's acknowledge it, right? You know, whether that's, you know, a little note, an email, whatever it is, a shout out, we have to recognize and acknowledge those small wins. So really starting with what they know, establishing the why, creating opportunities for peer leadership and support, and then recognizing small wins.
That's beautiful. Thank you for that.
And Paula, I love the celebrating small wins piece. Something that might seem so minor of your day and take such little time to recognize can go so far and so long for educators and other leaders in your network to hear that they're doing the right thing and being vulnerable. And there's a few quotes that I've read recently that has resonated with this question for me. One came out of the International Literacy Association in 2019 that talked about the principals are the chief architects of cultural and instruction programs, and that they really need to model expectations and walk the talk. So this self-reflection of leaders is so crucial, and being vulnerable is okay. And we really need to open ourselves up to this new learning, because in leadership courses that you take during your programs, a lot of times literacy leadership is not part of that coursework. And whether we agree with that or not, it's the case. And so that being said, there are wonderful opportunities for leaders to join networks to grow in this space. I mentioned our letters suite has that letters for administrators course that really allows leaders to get the knowledge depth that they require to be effective to do those walkthroughs, but also have that implementation science to move all of those gears with the family engagement and the data culture and all the things that go into that implementation piece. And the other quote that I have in my office and I look at every single day came from 2007, Gentilucci and Muto. They talked about how we influence the influencers. And so we might not be boots on the ground in the classroom every day as much as we want to be. You know, we want to be in those classrooms doing walkthroughs all the time, but realistically, we have that managerial piece that drives us back to our office or drives us back to that paperwork. But we really have the ability to influence the influencers every day. And whether it's the sticky note we leave in their mailbox for them to grab at the end of the day, whether it's a phone call that we do real quick to thank them for staying overtime to do their lesson plans, whether it's the teachers that you acknowledge, your data looks different from the rest of our team. What are you doing that's changing these student outcomes so much? Because as you mentioned, Paula, they might know something and they're doing something in their instruction that they can share with their team to really make the entire team grow. You know, our students should not have to worry about what teacher they're getting for the next grade level. It should not be a matter of hoping that we're getting the teacher that knows the best. We really should be able to provide them with classrooms that are equitable, so all of our teachers are doing the similar strategies and changing outcomes in a similar fashion. And I think one way to do that is what Rich had mentioned, invite teachers to open their doors and share with each other what they're doing that's working. Embrace this culture of excellence, right? Let's go in and see what Paula's doing in her vocabulary lessons. Watch what she's doing with that. Let's go in and watch what Cass can do in this space, because we're all learning. And I appreciated that Rich said it takes time to change what we're doing. We're not going to learn all of this and go in and magically change all of it at once. So I really think that we have to keep in mind that we have the ability to influence these influencers every single day. And the last thing I'll mention is with classroom walkthroughs, I think something so powerful that we can do as leaders is take a specific piece of that literacy block and have our teachers focusing on that one piece to learn and grow. And as leaders, we can share knowledge with them through a podcast, through an article, through a quick read, because we all have different ways that we balance our life and our work. And so whether I have 5 minutes to listen to a podcast on the way to soccer, or I have 20 minutes to sit down and read an article when I'm putting, you know, my family to bed at night, give your teachers the ability to have different ways to learn and grow, and you as well as a leader.
I love these nuggets that you all are providing, because one of the questions that came up, I think you both have addressed very succinctly with regard to focusing on the small wins and then influencing the influencers, because it was a question about, you know, what can you do to support those teachers that are not quite fully bought in? They are complying with doing their science of reading only because they don't want to be out of compliance, right? But they're not really fully invested in that process. So the things that you all are mentioning are so wonderful, and they're certainly addressing that question that we got from the audience. And also the idea of how do you balance that? How do you find the time? How do you make the time? And the finding the need and the importance of doing that and providing open opportunities for that to happen. So Rich, hope that didn't steal all of your thunder, but I certainly want to hear from you regarding the question of supporting teachers and the buy-in for how they get on board with science of reading.
Sure. Thanks, Cassandra. Well, I want to start off by saying, like Paula had mentioned at the beginning about tapping into what knowledge teachers already have, or knowing your teachers. And that is such an important piece. You know, I try here to give teachers as much ownership as possible over something. And if I have teachers that have, you know, some background knowledge or experience, like I said, I have a couple of teachers that were letters trained before we even started our whole science of reading, you know, full implementation process. I want to rely on those people and let them be leaders within the building. And they appreciate that. And I appreciate it too. And I think it's important also that you don't rush the process. I think here we've taken kind of a slow approach, maybe a little bit slower than I'd like, but I also want to make sure that moving forward, like with implementation, we're doing the right things. But I have noticed that we have felt a little bit more comfortable. We had some things in Ohio that we had to implement this year in regards to dyslexia screenings. We could have started it in the fall. We could have started it in with our fall benchmark or our January benchmark. And I just decided let's wait till January. We were still doing the same things, but you know, we're officially on the clock in January. But I wanted to make sure my teachers felt comfortable, and I wanted to encourage them, you know, that, you know, this is all new for all of us. Like, their responsibilities are new. My responsibilities as an administrator, you know, Aaron referenced about managerial tasks. And, you know, those are the ones I hate the most. I hate the managerial tasks. I like to be out in the building and seeing what's going on, but I do have to get drawn back to my desk from time to time. So there's some managerial tasks with it that are new to me that I'm trying to figure out and learn as well. But I think a critical piece too with the staff is throughout this whole process, we've been very explicit with each step and how we implement this. And we want to make sure we do it in a systematic way. You have to have a good plan, and we have a good plan, that, like I said, I reference a lot of our County Educational Service Center, but they have been a great asset to us and for me in creating this plan. So we have this good plan, and then we share it out with our teachers. I want them to have that time to have Q&A. I want them to say, you know what, Rich, it may sound better if we change the wording on this for this reason. I always say it's a working document. This is not what Mr. Z says. This is what we all say as a team. So I think promoting that teamwork through our plan has been so vital for us moving forward. And I think like with my teachers too, I think like giving them ownership, they're having those conversations and coming to me with ideas. And it's not a matter of, okay, we're having our literacy meetings now. What do you guys think? I like when they start that process off and come to me and say, they'll come to my office in the morning at like 7:30. Hey, we were talking about this in our first grade meeting. What do you think of? And that makes me feel so good. Because I don't want it to be like, you know, I'm the one that's, you know, I'm the hammer, you know, as a principal. That's not how it is here. I want them to have ownership. It's, you know, we're all involved in this. And I think finally, and something that Aaron had said that I liked too, is that acknowledging your staff, a sticky note in the mailbox, or giving them a phone call or shoot them a text message. You know, I try to do those things as much as possible and tell them, you know, like how much we appreciate the time and effort they put into this. And they appreciate it too. And I've had teachers tell me, I appreciate, you know, how much support you give us, how much involved you are. And it makes me, you know, you feel good. I mean, you know, just because you're the building leader doesn't mean you don't appreciate hearing a compliment too.
Absolutely. These nuggets are so important. Paula, did you want something else to add to that? I saw you come off mute.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I would say a couple of things. I would say that first, there has to be prioritization, you know, because this question really speaks to, you know, we have competing interests, whether it's time in the school day, whether it's the funds, right? Do you have enough money, you know, for your budget? So when you're thinking about all competing interests, you've got to prioritize. And I always say to people, if you go to KFC, right? Maybe they're out of, they can be out of the coleslaw. You can let that slide. I like the potato wedges, but if they're out of the potato wedges, I might let that slide. But I will not let it slide if they're out of chicken. Why? Because it's KFC. And so what they're supposed to be doing is they're all about the chicken. So if you're not doing the chicken, why are you? Just go ahead and put the clothes sign up. So it's the same thing with our schools. There are lots of things that we do in schools that are really, really important. Fundamentally, children must be able to learn to read. So if we don't have our reading program tight, what are we doing? So that should be really be driving the decisions that we make, how we're spending our money. Start there. We must get reading right. We must find the money, whether you're doing letters, whatever it is you're doing. If it is an evidence-based program, we have to prioritize it. That said, I would also say that, you know, we should be looking to open source. You know, you've got somebody in your building that is Googling all the time, that's always coming up to you, telling you about, oh, I just saw this, I just saw that. That may be you, you know, that may be one of the people that's on this webinar. And so what I would say is, folks can be asked to find open source materials that exist right now in the universe for free that you can access so that, you know, if you do have financial constraints, that you can still keep to the fidelity of Science of Reading programs. When our school first started, when I led a school, I had a teacher who was printing out decodable books. And it was crazy because you had to print it out and then you had to fold it kind of in a weird way to make sure the pages turned right. And I was doing it and some pages were upside down, right? So we found parents who were going to be volunteers. We gave them a specific role around creating those decodable books until we had enough money to obviously purchase a library of decodable books. But again, that was an open source item that we could get from the internet. But of course, you know, it did require some assembly. And then the last thing that I would say is just sort of around coordination. Two things come to mind. One is the high dosage tutoring. A lot of our buildings now have high dosage tutoring. It works. We know that high quality, high dosage tutoring works, but we need to coordinate that. If we have the tutors for the high quality, high dosage tutoring, working on and working in tandem with the classroom teachers based on a science of reading approach, that's when we're going to see the outcomes that we're looking for. A lot of times we have people in the building and say, oh, they're doing tutoring. Go ahead, go to tutoring. See you. Bye. And we don't know what they're doing. We have no idea. Well, that's not acceptable. So we have to do that coordination. That's another way that we're going to get that done. And so those, I think, would be top line where I would go. Really just making sure that we're prioritizing and keeping reading as that North Star, thinking about accessing open source materials and making sure that we're coordinating. Oh, the last piece of coordination is around family engagement stuff. And so look to other states. Tennessee has done a great job. They have, you know, one pagers for every single grade, how parents can support their children. So we can't leave that family engagement piece out, as well as family education piece out, so that parents can be doing, you know, the best that they can in order to support the instructional program at the school.
Yes. And of course, you've got to tackle the financial side of this whole situation and grappling with how you have funds to support the things that you are trying to do and impact those decisions that you're making in the classroom for whatever the instructional materials might be. But let me pivot a little bit, piggybacking on that, thinking about one of our questions that we've gotten from the audience. And that is, when you know better, you want to do better. And if you have the resources to do these things, then that certainly opens up that opportunity. But how do you respond when you've had the training and the learning of the science of reading and you realize that what you are now responsible for instructing does not line up with your understanding of how to implement the science of reading? And it does not align with what you now have been an eye-opening experience to understand how to properly provide that instruction to your students. What guidance can you all offer to our audience that are in that position where they now realize, uh-oh, what we've been doing does not match? And there was also someone that talked about, are we saying we're throwing out balanced literacy? So how do we juxtapose and balance all of these things? What would be your response to that? Either of you.
Yeah, I would just reiterate what I and other people have already said, is just start out by acknowledging that. To start out by naming that elephant in the room, right? And, you know, to say, hey, you know, we all came from different traditions. We all came from, you know, different programs and, you know, and whatnot, but we're not seeing that alignment. And, you know, we've got to figure this out and we've got to get it right. I think that using real life resources, Dr. Hamilton, Aaron had mentioned podcasts, for example. I think of the films that are out there now about reading, right? So The Right to Read is a big one. Lots of people have seen that. You can get site license to see it. And there you go. You know, we brought that film to the state of New Jersey, and now, you know, it's being shown all across the state. But that shows, you know, working class families, you know, families that are not wealthy, families that are trying to make it, they've got young kids and they're working on reading, right? And you know, and a teacher and how that teacher learns something new and how that changes things after she learns, you know, how to use the science of reading. But then there's another film called The Truth About Reading, where these are, you know, adults, middle class, in some cases, business people, in some cases, former educators who did not know how to read because they were not properly taught. And so you see that experience. And so there's different ways that we can engage our community to see this from different angles. You know, it's an inner city issue, but it's not just an inner city issue. It's a child issue, but it's not just a child issue. It's an adult issue, but it's not just an adult issue. And I think that when you can look at that screen and see those people, it begins to humanize it. And it feels less personal. It feels less like saying, you know, we don't know what we're doing. We don't know what's going on. And really it locates the issue in sort of a national, we dropped the ball issue, right? And which is not about you or me. It's about this is what happened and this is how we have to course correct. So I think really sort of pushing that out in the universe where you can see examples of how this is manifested in various, very different communities, can really help people to feel a little less guilty or defensive about this conversation.
I love that. Those open, honest conversations where you're stating the facts and looking at exactly what's happening so that you can make a plan from that point forward to bring about some really honest and impactful change. Oh, I am watching our time and that clock is ticking, ticking, ticking. So I don't want to leave without the opportunity for our friends in the audience to hear some really last nuggets of wisdom, some pieces of advice from all of you with regard to implementing the change in the buildings and the classrooms, the momentum to get that going. Where do they start? How does this happen? And in light of answering that question, also respond to what you know now that you did not know when you first started this process for yourself. There would also be a nice roadmap for someone in our audience that is looking to bring about this type of systemic change in their building or across their district, or maybe even perhaps impacting what they're doing at the state. So I want to start this question off with you, Rich, from the principal's perspective. What do you know now that you didn't know when you're thinking about implementing this change in your building? Aaron, we'll go to you to think about how to respond to that from the seat that you have, and then Paula will wrap up with you. Okay, take it away, Rich.
So when this process all started, I felt very overwhelmed, and to be honest with you, I didn't have an end in sight, and I wasn't sure the direction, and maybe even I lacked a little bit of confidence in my ability to lead this charge. But what I learned from that is that's okay. But I can't just sit on my hands. Paula mentioned about, podcasts, getting information from podcasts. And my wife loves podcasts. That's all she does, listen to podcasts. I never did. You know, I listen to my music when I work out and that's it. Well, then I started listening to podcasts and I started learning. And I think that's it's an untapped source with a lot of people. So I think that you have the ability, just find that way is so important. But don't, a couple of quick things I'll say for advice is this: don't ever be afraid to admit that you don't know something. Okay. You're human as a leader. So, but make sure you get answers. Don't leave your staff hanging. It's okay to tell your staff, I don't know that answer, but I'm going to find out for you. Get support, allow staff to share ownership. My last two points, and then I'll shut up. I think it's important that you let people know that you care about them. Okay. You care about them as teachers. You care about them as individuals. You care about them as human beings away from the school building. So I think those are critical. And always this perspective of you always have to focus your priorities on what's right for kids. Things may be uncomfortable for the adults. Okay. And we'll try to make it comfortable. But if it's right for a kid, that needs to be our mindset. What we do has to be designed around what is best for a child.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much, Rich.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Rich. I really appreciate you being here today and sharing your perspective. And I've seen multiple comments saying that people would love to have a leader like you. So I hope that your enthusiasm and your wisdom is spreading to some of our participants that are here today. So I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Mary. Of course, what
Paula said earlier is this must be a priority. It must be a priority, right? We have 32%, according to NAEP in 2022, are fourth graders that are proficient across the country. What we've been doing, pieces of it work. Pieces of it are not working. So to the question that someone mentioned earlier, do we throw it all away? Absolutely not. Going back to that KWL chart, right? Like, what do we know is working? There are pieces that have been working. So we have to make this our priority and move it up to the top of our plate, even though our plates are very full. And I think one piece of advice that I would give to leaders in the audience is this is a long game. This is not a 2024 initiative. This is not a silver shiny coin that you're going to chase and get to the end of the game and be like, we win. It is not. It is a long game. And I had the pleasure of sitting with a superintendent in Illinois last week who shared her plan that started 2 years ago and increases over the next 4 years with how she is building this knowledge of the science of reading of her educators in bite-sized pieces. Because that is how I think we effectively make change, is thinking about not only our educators in that K-2 space, but what are we doing with our educators in those 3 to 5 grade bands that have a different level of knowledge and require a different level of knowledge? And then what are we doing for our leaders? I really encourage those of you on this call today to continue doing things like this today and continue to talk with people across the country. There are so many people like Rich and Paula that are doing amazing things. And I was blessed to have Paula join my network a while ago, and I continue to engage in the things that she puts out there because I learn from her all the time. I hope I do that for others as well. So we need to have a network where we're learning from each other. We're learning from leaders like Rich. We're learning from, you know, passionate people like Paula across the country that are doing great things and great work. Together, we need to build this ecosystem of parents, educators, leaders, state organizations that are doing amazing things. At the very beginning of this hour, we talked about regional centers in Ohio that have been supporting this work. We have regional centers across the country that are really, really helping to do the sustainability piece. So thinking about this ecosystem that we're creating in our neighborhoods, in our communities, that are allowing our students to grow, our adults to grow, and these student outcomes to change. So I'll hand it over to Paula with that.
Yes, I'll be very brief because frankly, you know, what has been stated has already been just so strong, and I don't know. I will just add what I think has not been said. And the one thing that I wish I knew before I started to implement Science of Reading is how good balanced literacy feels to a lot of educators. How good the familiar feels. And I'm saying that because there are things that feel good that might not mean a hill of beans. It might not be good for you, but they feel really good. So can we just go ahead and name that, right? Like, we all know if you're supposed to eat the, you know, the fruit versus the ice cream, but when you put the ice cream in your mouth, it's so smooth, it feels good. And so I want to acknowledge that because teachers have had routines, students had routines, and they had the little three ring thing. And they're like, what does it sound like? What is it? There's a picture, right? And you know, and you were used to the centers that focused on certain kinds of things, even though they weren't necessarily as effective, right? And some were, you know, just to be honest, actually harmful, but it may have felt really good. And so I think that we need to be able to parse out the difference between things that feel good and knowing that working with the strategies around the science of reading will feel equally good, but we have to give them a chance. They will feel great. And nothing succeeds like success. So when they feel good and you now know how to read and you can now go to the classroom library and pick up a book and read it independently and so on, there's nothing more empowering than that. Let's be clear. There's nothing that feels better than that. But I think that if I had known just how good that felt to so many folks, it would have helped me to start with that, not necessarily acknowledging it, but thinking about that, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, and you're reminding me of when I did some work with Dr. Pitt Griffin from Griffin Burns and Snow, preventing reading difficulties in young children. She would talk about, you know, you can get two empty pans to balance, right? Two empty pans that have nothing in them. You can get those to balance. So, yeah, you make up some very good points. And I know these nuggets are going to go a long way with our audience. I want to thank each of you so much for your time today. Rich, the students and family and teachers in Lordstown are just so blessed to have you as their leader. Aaron, here at Lexia, we are honored to have your expertise and wisdom on our team. Thank you so much. And Paula, all of your leadership and advocacy and award-winning status there in New Jersey and New York is just powerful to see. And thank you so much for your time. For everyone attending live, I know you feel as inspired as I do right now from hearing from these amazing people. Thank you so much for showing the love across the screen for them. Just a couple of reminders before we close out for our day today. Again, thank you everyone for your time, for joining us. Please join us every single day this week, Monday through Thursday, I should say, through Thursday for Science of Reading Week. As we continue these conversations, as you see, from the most brilliant minds on the national literacy stage. Now, to all of you out there that are district leaders in the audience, heads up, tomorrow at noon Eastern will be a very special presentation just for you, dedicated to the discussion of your leadership role in cultivating an ecosystem for science-based reading instruction where you serve. And again, I am Cassandra Wheeler, Director of Letter State Success. It has been my honor serving today as your host and event moderator. I love Science of Reading Week. I love when all of you join us. There's much more in store, so stay tuned. Come back and see us tomorrow and again Thursday. Thank you all for your time. And again, thank you, Rich and Paula and Aaron, for being here today and all of you that joined us, whether you're joining us now or in the future when you're watching the recording. Thank you so very much. And we'll see you again tomorrow. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.